I think we should get started here. There is only one item on the agenda, as you all know, and typically most of us don't like to do one item, but Councilman Street had asked some time ago to address this particular item, and I decided to move forward with it anyway, in order that there will be a co-chair to replace Councilman Street during his desire to resign as co-chair of public safety. With that, I will call the executive committee meeting to order. I'll begin with the approval of the minutes from the meeting of September 22nd.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Councilor Hollins?
Yes.
You want to do a roll call so we know who's voting?
Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. I guess I should have done that before I did the approval. Councilman Bell?
Here.
Councilman Carter?
Here.
Councilman Cartier? Councilwoman Diller?
Here.
Councilwoman Dern?
Here.
Council President Hartley Nagel?
Here.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick?
Here.
Councilman Sheldon?
Here.
Councilman Smiley?
Here.
Councilman Street?
Here.
Councilman Tackett?
Here.
Councilman Woods? I believe that leaves us with 11 present, and Councilman Cartier and Councilman Woods are both absent.
Councilman Cartier is in the building. I guess they're having problems getting him connected.
Okay, all right, very well. This will be short. We'll move on to...
Speak first.
I'm sorry?
This is the council president. I've had my hand up. I'd like to speak first.
Oh, sure. Go right ahead. Councilwoman, Council President Karen Holly Nagel.
Okay. I see this on the agenda, but it wasn't clear what it was about. This really, under our rules, comes under the purview of the president, not another councilman. And I'm going to refer to rule number 511 and 512. Specifically, 512 says, committee chairpersons are appointed by the president, subject to council approval, and shall be identified in writing to council and the administration. So if Mr. Street would like to indicate today that he would not like to be on the public safety committee, I could take that, you know, publicly as he would like to be off, and then I can appoint someone else. At that point, we would move forward and put it on a council agenda and then move to vote on it.
I appreciate that. It's really up to council, and
this is the rule I'm reading, Penrose. We don't pick and choose which wolves we're going to follow that day.
I understand. Let me just say that, if you will, going back, I guess, almost 3 years ago, you remember as well as the members of council who were present at that time, when this decision was made by the majority of council, your role, council put me in this position as president pro tem. I didn't ask for it.
Mr. President.
I'm sorry?
But not president. And this clearly
falls on president. No, may I finish, please? Let me respond to you. And then it's up to council to determine what council wants to do. My position to you is that council remove you from your responsibilities or some of your powers, as you would like to say, and those were relegated to the pro tem, which happens to be me. As I was saying, I did not lobby for it. I did not campaign for it. It's just the fact that I am the president pro tem. This comes up quite frequently, and as far as I'm concerned, council can reinstate its position or not. It's the majority of council. There's no benefit for me stepping in to take over duties, quite frankly, which I don't get paid for. I get more harassment than anything else, but it's just a matter it came to me. And when these things come up, when you don't appreciate it, then your wrath is directed toward me simply because I was president pro tem long before you came to council. As a matter of fact, my probably second or third year in council, I was voted as president pro tem. So I inherited these roles because of your refusal to do what was recommended for you to do. Secondly, We have not always followed this particular format that you're suggesting here today, but if council wants to do that, it's absolutely fine with me. But I think that it needs to be crystal clear, because it's going to be a burden for me to try to do what council has asked me to do. Councilman Smalley.
I don't want to give, I know nobody wants my interpretation or explanation, but I would like to ask council to council to clarify what council restricted the president from doing and enter his piece here, if I might.
Mike Migliore, council to council. Councilman Smiley, the question you asked me, I have to recite now from memory here. I'll do that. What I recall the limitations being placed on the council president pursuant to that vote was oversight of a council aide specific to the president, and then general management or oversight of staff generally. That's my recollection of it. You know, it was a vote of council. So if someone here has a different view, obviously, that may be helpful. But that's my recollection.
Mr. Hollins, Council President. I want to specifically address a couple things. You've never experienced wrath from me about this. And quoting the rules is not wrath. But it is about enforcing the rules. And state law also says, I've not made a big deal of this because I didn't want to spend the next couple of years in litigation. I wanted to help people. That's what I came in here to do, and that's what I did. But the state law is very clear that all council members, and that includes the council president, have the same rights and responsibilities. We can't be taking anything from each other, nor should we be. You know, and the what the council did decide on talked about the employees. I was good with that. But I also wasn't going to be able to follow through with what was asked of me, which was to have somebody direct me in a leadership role indefinitely over years, not weeks, not a couple hour for harassment training, which I never harassed anybody, but years. And I would never get an aide. And I would have to take direction from the individuals that were trying politically to do me harm. That made no sense, and it had never been done before. So the public has really been misinformed about this. I went to my attorney with this, and he said, this is just crazy. There has not been any incidents before or after where I harassed anybody ever. In fact, I've been too kind and been very patient with, you know, hostility that has been directed towards me on council. And you know, we need to get back to business. We have, for God's sakes, we've got a pandemic going on. We need to place people in the proper order, following our rules, in chairmanship so we can get things done. Not about attacking any member of council or dealing with any of this nonsense. This should have been really easy. Mr. Street just asked me if he wanted to be off of the Public Safety Committee. I did get an email.
Madam President, I'm going to have to cut you off. I am chairing this meeting, whether you like it or not, but you're going on and on. Let's be very clear here.
You'll never see me in a meeting cutting people off. In fact, I'm very, very
let's stick to the point. I think it's very clear.
You want to cut me off because I'm saying things you don't want the public to know.
That is so untrue. What I've said earlier is that I was placed in this position. I said that I have incurred the wrath from you because it's not the first time you have challenged me for acting in the capacity that council has placed me in. I've also said that I did not campaign for it. I did not ask for it. I did not lobby for it. I'm like you. I prefer to have some clarity around it. So whenever you feel that somehow I've overstepped my boundaries, I just think it needs to be crystal clear. And what council to council has just said makes it appear to me that maybe his interpretation of what happened is different than some council members feel that what happened. But for God's sake, it really doesn't matter to me. So the fact of the matter is, what I have been doing, quite frankly, I don't mind you doing it. That is signing off on timesheets and payrolls, et cetera. and getting the calls when there's snow days, et cetera. Quite frankly, it's fine with me if you were to do it, but it's a council decision. That's all I'm trying to say. It is a council decision. It doesn't matter to me one iota. Quite frankly, it would be a relief for me.
But it would take me going to court. If we need to go there.
Well, it would mean council makes the decision. Penrose Hollins does not make the decision. It's a council decision. You're implying that I somehow put myself in this position. I did not. I was voted to be president pro tem of council going back 20 plus years ago. So council has made a decision, and whatever council decides, then is perfectly fine with me. There needs to be clarity. Councilman Smalley.
I'm not looking to rehash this whole thing, but bottom line is, council took nothing away, Council President. You gave it away when you refused to follow the recommendation of the investigator. That's it. Ironically, you didn't find it harassment that you charged me with harassment, which I was found not guilty of. But that's fine as well. But council did decide to limit your oversight and interaction with council staff. That's the clarity of it. As I recall, Councilman Hollins, I appreciate you being willing that you have undertaken that. And as far as I'm concerned, until such time as what council votes to undo what we require to the council president, or it is fulfilled, that council pro tem continue to be the link with the council staff. That's it. As far as this here, that's for you guys to battle. I can tell you, I know what I did. And that was, I sent an email to the council president. Of course, it was a vacant seat at that time. I sent an email to the council president and all of council requesting that she bring my name forward to replace her on the executive committee. I gave two opportunities for that to happen. When it didn't, then I made the motion to suspend the very rule that she alluded to for her failure to abide by. And then council voted to seat me. That was the process that I followed at that time. I got nothing else on it. Council Pro Tem, I yield to you.
It's really not worth an argument to me.
Right.
I just seek clarity. Right. I know that when Councilwoman Diller decided that she no longer wanted to chair the subcommittee on boards and commissions, we simply were in a committee meeting and we made the motion and Councilwoman Durham became the co-chair. So there's been some inconsistencies, but the bigger issue for me is that maybe it needs to be spelled out, especially what the pro tem, whoever that may be, is charged to do, because it's uncomfortable for me to come to these meetings at the meeting and then have these types of discussions as if somehow it's a power grab. Quite frankly, seven members of council determines whatever. I want to go to Councilman Street.
I would agree.
Councilman Street?
Well, I think this needs to be resolved today. And I think a motion to suspend the rules should be made and then the motion put on the floor and let council vote both up or down.
I object to that. We have rules and you just can't arbitrarily suspend them. I know, and this happens where you're not clear about what's on the agenda. And then you do these, you know, for other people as well, as it's been done to me, is let's gotcha, you know, that we want to do harm, but you don't want to tell them what's going to happen ahead of time. This needs to be clear. And that's why the rule was written the way it was in all likelihood, is that the council president puts it out there. Council members have some opportunity to decide what they want to do. Do they want to stay on that committee or get off of that committee or move around? And this doesn't allow them to do that. This is surprising most of council, and most of council were not aware of what was going to happen in this meeting today. And we need consistency. We need to have, this is what precedent of what happened with other council presidents, what happened with other council chairmanships, so people know what to expect. That's what the law and rules are for. And I'd ask Mr. Migliore to give an opinion. I mean, what I'm reading here is very clear. Committee chairs are appointed by the president. subject to council approval. So if council doesn't approve in the next meeting, you vote it up or down, you know, a motion is made, and it gives everybody the opportunity to, you know, see maybe someone else would like that chairmanship. We don't know, but it gives people the opportunity to decide what they'd like to do, how they feel about that. Mr. Migliori.
I'm chairing the meeting, Councilman Smiley.
Yeah, try to help resolve this in some way. First off, let's be clear. No council co-chair has to ask the president or anybody else if they can resign from a committee. So that's not a question, that's a statement. So he doesn't have to ask you what you said. So let's clarify that.
I can put out a letter, it's not important.
Mr. Pro Tem, to the land use co-chairs, since if there is no specific committee this has to go on, would you be willing to place the issue of an appointment to the Public Safety Committee on your Land Use Committee if the individuals involved agree for next Tuesday? That would only be 7 days rather than dragging it out 2 weeks, and that way they would be there before a public safety agenda or anything was put forward. If the pro tem doesn't mind, and if that will resolve this and move it off the plate.
That would be fine.
That's a suggestion.
Yeah, let me just say this. It's very clear that Councilman Street has expressed his desire to no longer serve as co-chair of public safety. It was done in a public meeting. Right. Councilman Street even said at that time he wanted me to remove him and he would like to serve in another capacity. Since that time, right, Councilman Street has had conversations with Councilman Carter, who does not chair another committee. And Councilman Carter, as far as I can understand, agreed to replace Councilman Street. As a courtesy to Councilman Bell, I think before the agenda went out, I sent a notice to Councilman Bell as a courtesy. It's not required that Councilman Carter had expressed an interest to serve, and it would be coming forward. A couple of days ago, Councilman Carter sent a letter to Council President Hartley Nagel, copied me, saying that he had been asked and he was interested in serving. That is what has happened. So okay. It has not been an undercover sort of a overtake or anything like that whatsoever. If the council president feels that she in some way has been, however she wants to frame it, then let council decide, let's move forward. To me, I've never seen it happen like this before, and I've taken over certain responsibilities, quite frankly. When I'm told that I'm responsible for doing it, I try to move forward. But it's not anything that's helping me in any way whatsoever, you know, other than thing that me, it's burdening me because I keep going through this, and I'd rather just get it over with and write down, if anything whatsoever, that I should be doing or not doing, or in fact, consider allowing the president to have whatever she feels like she deserves to have, regardless of what happened 3 years ago. It really doesn't matter to me. Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
We waited so long. I don't remember what I was going to say. I will say that the next meeting I chair, and if you would choose to have it on there, that's fine. If it makes it any more clear, Mr. Street would just publicly state in this meeting. And I know he said it, I know he said to you in the last meeting, you know, if you have anything to do with this, get me off of public safety. But if it clarifies it, that he would just say he officially resigned, we can put it on the next land use meeting. We have a very short agenda.
I think that the way I understand is with Councilman Street, his resignation would be determined about on as to who is going to move into the position. So there is no resignation that has occurred at this point in time. But it's up to Councilman Street. It's his request. I don't want to try to say what Councilman Street's position is, but Councilman Street.
Councilman Street can say what Councilman Street's position is. Given everything that had transpired, and given the fact that it appeared to me that Councilman Carter was getting along and working much better with the chief of police than I was and would be. And I thought he would be effective. I also thought that, in all fairness, I think that whoever's co-chair of public safety should be an advocate for all the departments across the board, especially the police. Now, you'll recall that in 2012, prior to President Bullock taking office, when the police sicked the dog on a 15-year-old girl in Dunleaf running from a stolen car, that following the August, I believe, 12 shooting, 2012, I resigned in protest of what was going on. The problem with that was, during over a year and a few months that I was not serving as co-chair, co-chairman Bell had to do everything by himself, which I didn't think was fair. Now, since I had that conversation, since I said what I said at a previous meeting, letters come forth saying that we'll be glad if you and I are not on public safety, which just for that, I'm inclined to say, just for that, I'm going to stay. And second, something reeks of mischief here that I'm not comfortable with. So y'all can put me off, you can vote me off, but as of this minute, because of what's transpired and because I something reeks of mischief here, I was trying to do the right thing by both the department, Councilman Bell, and I thought Councilman Carter was doing a good job. But since whatever's going on that I really don't understand and don't have time for, I'm not resigning.
Any further comment?
Yes.
Councilman Bell?
Mr. Chairman, you know, you're always appreciative of folks that want to either volunteer or look forward to serving on a committee. But I can tell you from my past experience of working with Councilman Street that he is an excellent co-chair of public safety. He was back when we had the incident where he stepped aside for a while. But we purposely didn't want to fill that because, in all honesty, I sincerely wanted Councilman Street come back active on that committee. And still to this day, Councilman Street, with his knowledge and experience in the city of Wilmington, in public safety itself through the years, continues to be an excellent co-chair of public safety. So I'm glad and appreciative to hear what the councilman just said. And I look forward to continuing to work very closely with Jay and all of council and with our public safety department in moving forward. So I thank Councilman Street for his consideration to stay on.
So this is resolved.
Council President Hartley Nagel.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that I waited. I heard what Mr. Street had said at the last meeting, but I also took it that it was in the heat of the moment, and I wanted to give him time to come forward and evaluate what did he want to do. You know, when he had some time in between that meeting, and it looks like even now. I did receive the letter or the email from Councilman Carter last night, and I called him this morning, and we had a discussion, and he said he had spoken to Councilman Street and let me know that if, and I said, if Councilman Street wants to come off, you know, please, you know, say it formally, and then I would put a letter out tomorrow, you know, putting him on as required by our rules, rule number 5, and put him on as the public safety chair. However, with how things have evolved right now, it looks like that won't be necessary. So if Councilman Street intends to stay on as public safety chair.
So you're gonna write a letter tomorrow to put him on without a council vote?
Hmm? No, it would go as according to the rules. You put it in writing, and then at the next meeting, or it could be a, you know, any of the committee meetings, then the council votes on it. And if they don't, you know, agree with it,
what would you be voting on? For clarity,
voting on that councilman would be appointed as the co-chair.
That what councilman?
It would be a motion for Councilman Carter to be co-chair of the Public Safety Committee.
Well, I agree with Councilman Street. I've probably had more conversations with Councilman Street on this issue as opposed to any other member of council. I think Councilman Street is very clear here, but I sense the same thing that Councilman Street is sensing. I mean, I don't think either one of us was born last night. So the fact that Councilman Street will stay on, I think it's clear Councilman Street's position, and I think it's clear the pushback that he has received and I have received. So the fact that we're in the middle of playing this, whatever we're doing here, that's fine with me. It's fine with Councilman Street. But don't misinterpret what Councilman Street is saying, and please don't misinterpret what I am saying. It's not clear here, and I think people don't want to say what they feel, but we know what's going on. And so the fact that Councilman Street is going to stay on, I don't think it's because he wants to stay on. I personally think it's because it's reluctance to go along with what's going on here. Councilman Carter, then Councilman...
I just want to clarify. I mean, I didn't seek the chairmanship or anything else. I consider the chairmanship, based on reading the rules, is nothing than an administrative role. I'm not sure that's always how we practice it on council, but that's what the rules seem to indicate very clearly. But that said, Jay and I work together great. Bill and I work together great on these issues. I've got some major public safety issues that I'm going to work on. And quite frankly, I can have probably more focus on not being the chair of a committee. It's at work for a lot of headaches. But I just, quite frankly, I understand very clearly Jay's frustration. We've talked a lot about it. I was happy to step up and throw my name in. And I had no illusions that there wouldn't be other names or anything else. I just was willing to offer. I don't have any thing coming through. I'm not sure, Karen, that you have fully captured my understanding of our conversation this morning. You know, I sent it to everyone to be as open and transparent. Once I knew it was happening, that's what's going on here. I don't know what's happening behind the scenes. Doesn't really matter to me. I need to do some major things with policing south of the canal, with providing facilities for paramedics, second paramedic station south of the canal with the growth zone, some community policing needs we have, and other things. I could do it either way. I just, tried my best to follow the rules as I saw them. That said, I can tell you all that I fully do plan to bring forward to this committee some changes in the rules, because they're about as clear as mud to me. And I really think we need to review what's going on with these committees and what the chairmanships are, and clarify how they're assigned, and put it in writing and updated rules, along with other things. I think our rules need to be comprehensively reviewed, and I think we would do a service to the public to clarify our own rules so it's very clear to them, not just for this, on a lot of other things. So please don't misread that. I was willing learning of this to serve, but I don't really have an axe or I don't care one way or the other. I'm willing to do it for the good of council and for the good of the public, but I don't really care one way or the other.
Thank you, Councilman. I noticed Councilman Smalley, yeah. Councilman Bell, and Councilwoman Diller. And we can just wrap this up because probably we need to have another meeting. This is getting to be a little beyond whatever.
Couple of quick things. I just want to make sure we're aware that Councilman Cartier has been on since about 3:15. So Councilman Cartier is present.
Thank you.
The only other thing, I'm satisfied with what all the co-chairs do. I don't care who co-chairs what committee. I'm going to work with them. I'm going to support them, and I'll do whatever I can to help. As far as behind the scenes shenanigans, whatever, I'm going to tell you right up front. I didn't know what this was about and didn't call and ask until this meeting today. I don't have any shenanigans. I don't have any ulterior motives. I don't work behind the scenes. My goal, and my history will show it, is I just like to know the rules, procedures, like you, Councilman Holmes. I want to know what we're following so that in 2 weeks, I can follow the same thing. That's all I'm after. And Councilman Cartier, I mean, Carter, I hear what you're saying. I would tell you, personally, I don't find the rules confusing. The ones I have, council, I've worked with other council members, and we brought forward changes and adjustments to clarify. I don't think we need a rewrite of council rules. And sometimes we get into things like today where the rules are what they are, but they don't meet what certain people want. There were a lot of, Council President, you said a lot of things that weren't true today, but that's fine. That's nothing new. Like listening to the White House. So I'm done.
Councilman Bell and Councilwoman Diller.
Yeah, just real briefly, Mr. President, Pro Tem, Mr. Chairman. I just, without being repetitious, I just want to make everyone aware that through the years, you know, Jay and I not only work close together, we've met with folks in public safety, and I think there's been significant improvements made. We're going through a time and a day and age when there's a lot of scrutiny. There's a lot of things that need to be done. There's improvements needed to be made. And I stand with the comment that I look forward to continuing to serve together with Councilman Street. He has done an excellent job. We both bring something to the table from the public safety field. But at the end of the day, we facilitate meetings and topics with all of council. And what the committees do is representative of what serves all of council and all the public throughout the entire county. So, thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Councilwoman Diller.
Yes, I just wanted to say thanks to Councilman Bell and Councilman Street for their continued service. That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. I would just like to get some clarity from council to council. Just what is the role of the president pro tem? It's a little embarrassing to me to be put in this position and to be undermined or to give the impression to the public that somehow I'm overstepping my boundaries here. So if it changes from week to week or whatever, maybe whenever I'm asked to do something, maybe there should be some clearance. This is very uncomfortable for me. And I just quite frankly don't like it. And I would prefer to have whatever my role is or is not, to have it come from council to council so we can avoid this nonsense in the future. It's not pleasant. Any other further comment from any member of council? Seeing none, is there a motion?
I have something under other.
Thank you, Councilman Snolly. Yes, please.
Yes, real quick. And I'm not going to taint all of them. I just want to give you an experience that I just went through as far as COVID testing. I've tried to check all the different ways so that my constituents call with a problem. I can be familiar with what they're talking about. I, for myself, am not recommending anyone go to a Walgreens for testing. I went to the Canby Park Walgreens. It was drive-through, which was fine, but it's drive-through the prescription pickup. So you got people in line trying to get their prescriptions as well. But I was the sixth car back. It was 44 minutes until I got to test. That was on October 3rd. Today, I called the Department of Health looking for my results. Today, some 10 days later. And then on their phone line, I was given an email address that said I needed to request it through that. So I did that, and then it was quick. It was probably about 15, 20 minutes. I got the response that it was negative, which I'd already known because I took one Friday someplace else at one of the drive-thrus and got those results Sunday morning. So just for me, because I have been sending out the testing sites to all my constituent leaders, you know, to get out there for the people. I'm not sending Walgreens anymore. 10 days, 10 days. You realize how many people I could have, well, I wouldn't have infected a lot of people because nobody comes around me. But some of you have friends and stuff. So that could have happened. So I'm just saying, the drive-through is fine. I heard nightmare stories about the Walgreens before and the way the system worked. And I just say for me, 10 days is just outrageous when others are turning them around between 24 and 72. So I just want to put that out there and make everybody else aware of it.
Thank you, Councilman Smalley. I see Councilwoman Kilpatrick smiling. I think she made that point before.
Same experience. Nice to have validation, isn't it?
I thought it was just because you were a woman, though.
Councilman Carter.
Yeah, I just want to let you know, I had the same experience. It was a little better, 6 days. I have several constituents who have had the same problem. And if you're going to do contact tracing, if you don't get started within 48 hours, you've lost the battle. So we should revisit what's happening and why the state is unable to do this, and probably talk to the administration about whether or not we need to step back up to the levels that we were doing before, because depending on the state and transferring the funding there is not working. We had indication it wasn't working a while ago when we talked about having Delaware Healthy Communities do more. But this is really problematic going into the fall, and it needs to be improved.
I think that was the last word. Is there a motion?
Motion adjourned.
On a second. Thank you very much. Meeting's adjourned.
I amend the grants budget, appropriate $150,000 from the state of Delaware FY 2021 operating budget to the FY 2021 Police Behavioral Health Grant to be administered by the Newcastle County Department of Public Safety. We have on with us this afternoon, we have Captain Patricia Davies and also Laurie Kane. And I believe Colonel Bond is on also with us. So with that, would one of you want to speak to this particular grant? I don't see it. No, there's Laurie.
He'll mute it.
Yep, you're muted, Laurie.
Hello?
Okay, I got you. Sorry.
Can you hear me?
Yep. All right. Okay.
Laurie Kane and Colonel Vaughn Bond is on board here.
Okay. Colonel, you want me to take it or you want to take it?
Well, you go ahead. If there's anything I need to fill in, I will.
Okay. So this is the second year of funding that Representative Valerie Longhurst has awarded to us to continue with our behavioral health unit, which, as you all know, it is a mental health professional that rides along with our police officer and answers 911 calls that are related to mental health. They also deal with follow-up, any type of follow-up and connection of care with that individual. So this grant, although we did get it last year, this is a renewal. It's going to pay for the same thing. We are paying for a mental health professional. We are also paying for a cell phone for communication, and also a bit of money in there for marketing campaigns so that we can make sure to have the public aware of our efforts.
Okay, questions from council. Co-Chairman Street, any question?
Muted. Jay, you're muted.
Nothing, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, any question, Councilman? On the grant, first grant?
I just have one.
Okay. With that, we'll go to Councilman Dave Carter.
Yeah, I just was wondering if these grants are great. This is a great program. I'm just wondering if we have in place anything to make this money more secure under a county position, or do we have an indication that the state may make it permanent? I'm just trying to figure out long-term this is a pretty progressive program, a direction we need to go in and expand on. I just want to know what our longer plan is, because it appears to be working well.
Right. So at this point, I continue to look for continuation funding. This is a three-year grant federally. Longhurst has been year to year, so it really does depend on the state budget, whether we get that full $150,000, which is essential. But as far as what the vision of longevity. I'm not real sure. The Colonel may have a little more insight on that, but my path forward is to continue to look for grant funding, which I know that's not the best answer. But like you said, this is a very hot topic and the feds are still throwing a lot of money at it. So I kind of am a firm believer of ride the wave as long as we can. But I do understand what you're saying. There does need to be some type of secure allocation that maybe comes a little bit closer to home rather than relying on the feds.
What's up, Colonel Bond, if I may? Hello?
Yes, go right ahead, sir.
We hear you.
Okay, Colonel Bond. Good afternoon, everyone. Yes, to Councilman Carter's question, that is a primary goal that we have as an agency. We are very fortunate that we are in the beginning phases of this grant here, and we still have time left. However, we have had discussions, or I have had discussions, with the CAO, and we have talked about this. And so it is something that we are going to continue to strive for in terms of turning these into hard positions at some point down the road. I don't foresee that happening this year, but we're covered by the grant for the next couple years or so. And that is a goal that we are able to bring individuals on and make them full-time county employees to lessen our need to rely on grants.
Okay, any other question or comment from members of council?
Smiley's got one.
Okay, Councilman George Smiley, then Councilman John Cartier.
Colonel Bond or Ms. Kane. So I think you touched on it, Colonel, and maybe that was the answer to my question, so let's make sure. This position, is it a contract position at this time or some type of county employee, part-time or whatever? You're muted.
Well, I can answer.
Okay. Yeah.
Sir. Yeah, I can answer that. The position that this is paying for is, yes, it is, a contract position. It's Alex Schofield. You know, I'd have to check to see if she actually is a county employee. I'd have to find out. Colonel, you know that?
She is.
Okay.
Okay. Because the reason I asked that is if it's not contract and it's county, mm-hmm. if it's contract and we're going to transition, now we have to look at the benefit package and everything else and who's going to fill in when they're on vacation or something like that. So if they're already a county employee, that makes it a much smoother transition.
Right. And this grant does pay for benefits and salary. So that's covered.
So the dollar's the dollar. So that's
yes.
good. That's what
yes,
I was
sir.
Looking at.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Councilman Cartier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think every member of council understands the value of operating specialized unit within county police to offer, mental health interaction and, a kind of intervention rather than just an arrest scenario. I think it's an incredibly important attenuation of the policing role and our community policing effort. And I think it would behoove us, at least for myself personally, I'd like to have it, as we go forward with this, to get some understanding of how this unit is deployed, maybe to illustrate through some actual incidents, responses that have occurred without violating privacy rights or anything, about how we are using this unit and the kind of success we are enjoying with it. And I think that not only would benefit members of council, but I think it would benefit the public that we serve to understand that we are pursuing this very innovative policing model. And I just, in the future public safety agenda, would like to have, a presentation of the effectiveness of this unit.
This is Colonel Bond, if I
Colonel
can.
Bond.
Yes. So, Councilman Cartier, thank you very much. What we're trying to do, I think you've received some of the emails that we've shared with you, just some of the complimentary emails of the successes that this unit has had when dealing with individuals and their families who are going through a mental crisis. And so I try to make sure that we forward those over so that everyone gets a pretty good understanding about what we're doing. But what I would recommend, and you're welcome anytime, is that anytime that you have a free moment and you would like to come and do a ride along, not you, but anyone on council would like to do a ride along with the officers and the mental health professionals in the behavioral health unit, you're more than welcome. And this way you can go out and you can see firsthand exactly how they're interacting with those individuals in need, and how we are deploying them to some of the issues that we discussed in our TAPS meeting. I think that, you know, I know that you come to the TAPS meetings and you have an opportunity to hear that assignments are given out to them to ensure that we are dealing with them and getting them the proper assistance and help versus going the traditional way of talking about simply making arrests to make the problem go away, which we found does not happen. Okay. And hasn't been successful. But anytime that you want to, I can certainly set that up.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions or comment from members of council? Okay. All right. We'll go to ordinance number 20-109, amend the grants budget, appropriate $533,593.49 from the State of Delaware Department of Homeland Security to the FY 2021 Fund to Combat Violent Crime grant for the Department of Public Safety.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Councilman Durham?
Thank you. I just wanted to let you know I made it in after some technical issues were preventing me from getting here.
Okay, we see, and please let the record reflect Councilwoman Durham is on board with us. Okay. Colonel, did you have anybody in particular that you would like to speak to this particular ordinance?
Yes. Captain Davies is here, and she will go over this ordinance.
All right, Captain.
I don't see her yet.
She on there?
No, I don't see her. I see Laurie.
Okay. Well, I'll speak to her. This is the
there she is. Captain Davies?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry. I was still muted. You just unlocked me.
Sounds like one of them wireless carrier commercials.
I know. I'm very sorry. Good afternoon, Captain Davies with the County Police. Just wanted to go over the fact we, with the funds to combat violent crime, FY21, it was broken down into four sections. The four sections are buy money, overtime, equipment, and training. The buy money is typically utilized by the drug unit to help establish and continue the fight against heroin and other illegal drugs and serves as a nexus to our violent crimes. The overtime budget that we have allocated, this money is utilized mainly for our TAPS or hotspot areas throughout the county. We post the extra duty jobs weekly as we see fit with some of the areas that happen in the community that might spike up or have an uptick. We'll also post certain jobs in that area as well. The equipment section has been, there have been four items identified in the equipment section, as you can see. A white phosphor and PEX are for our SWAT team, which deals with upgrading service weapons, basically deals with night vision devices for any type of nighttime or dark entries or tactical entries. And the upgrade to our bomb robot, which is for our EOD team. These are parts on our current robot have no longer working, and we need to upgrade them so that this particular piece of equipment is like an on-screen avatar and will be a helpful tool for us to utilize. We also have it coincide with the PowerHawk system that we just recently got through the SLEEF grant back in March. This helps with breaching doors and vehicles and other major scenes that we do have. And then the other piece of the equipment that we were requesting was the drone, which will search large areas in tactical operations, providing the visual operations for any potential suspects. It also provides a audio and visual as well, and does do recordings of like a live feed if we have that hooked up. And then the training section, which is the last section, we have 11 different trainings that we identified for FY21 for different certifications or recertifications, special schools, and current or specific training topics that we know that we're going to be sending officers to, like de-escalation. And right now, just a lot of the trainings aren't identified. It's sort of lumped into patrol or tactical or any other unit, just until we can figure out if they're going to be doing them virtually or in small groups. But right now, that's where we are with how we broke it down in those four areas.
Okay, thank you, Captain. Questions or comment from members of council? Co-Chairman Street, anything?
Well, regrettably, Mr. Chairman, a lot of things. I was going to raise this on the other, but since this is on the agenda, you know, this has to be supported because we're at a point now where violent crime throughout the state is just out of control. And the question that I'm going to ask all the jurisdictions, ours, Wilmington, state, how many shootings and how many arrests? And I'm looking at 146 shootings as of yesterday in the city. How many arrests? And situations where we have, you know, there was a point in time when even criminals had some scruples. Now it doesn't matter. Women are getting shot, you know, targeting people. To the point where the street's saying people are actually targeting people from jail. And they don't care. And all these shootings, be it in the city, be it in the low-income areas of the county, they were shooting in more affluent areas, folks would be getting arrested. So, you know, what's going on now, in my view, is not working. And these little gangsters are out of control. And it just can't continue, and it can't be business as usual. They need all the support they can get. But at some point in time, these little thugs have to be taken off the street. And if I just look at the city alone, well, let's say individuals. Let's say it was one person did all, one person per shooting. At most, you got 146 shooters. You mean to tell me some thugs between 15 through young adulthood are allowed to go forward and terrorize this whole state? I mean, it's not just in Newcastle County. It's not just in the city. Y'all read the paper same as I do. So I'm glad we had this, but there's a lot of work to do. And I'm going to raise the question of all the jurisdictions, realistically. How many shootings? How many arrests?
Thank you, Councilman. Any other questions or comment from members of council? Okay, hearing none, we'll go to resolution number 20-196. By the way, 20-109 will be voted on at our regular council meeting on October 27th, 2020. Resolution number 20-196. Resolution adopting the Newcastle County Multi-Jurisdictional All-Hazard Mitigation Plan 2020 update as approved by FEMA. And I saw where our emergency management manager, Dave Carpenter, is on board with us now. Dave, would you like to speak to this, please?
Yes, I can, Mr. Chairman. And if you'd like, I can go ahead and do the presentation to the fact just on a resolution and including item number 6 on the agenda. to cover the whole plan kind of information, if that's okay with you.
That'd be great, sir.
Okay. And let me share my screen. All right, so the 2020 Newcastle County Multi-Jurisdictional All-Hazard Mitigation Plan update is what this resolution is requesting to adopt. The plan, as briefed to all of council back in February, when I came to the executive committee, presented the information that we had done. This is our five-year update. This is the plan required from FEMA to outline mitigation measures that the county or also all the municipalities will take on utilizing FEMA mitigation grants or in the disaster declaration mitigation grant that comes after disaster declaration. It also qualifies Newcastle County for disaster assistance after a pending disaster declaration. The thing is getting in the way. What you have before you is the Newcastle County Executive Summary of the plan. The entire plan will be available up on the website. The public copy of the plan will be available. And the public copy does not differentiate that much from the agency copy or the one that goes to the municipalities and the agencies. The only difference is that the vulnerability assessment is removed from the plan for the public copy. And that's because obviously that has some sensitivities to it. It has some information in there that is not understandable to the public and other entities without having the full concept of the planning process and what is involved in that, and some other outlying variables and other things that are included in that vulnerability assessment. And then obviously, again, just the sensitivities of nature. Looking through the executive summary, it kind of gives you really the nuts and bolts of the entire 200-page plan that we had to update when we were finished with the plan and submitted it to FEMA. It took us from October until about the end of March, beginning of April, to finish the update of the plan internally, mostly internally with us. A large support from our GIS section from county land use, and then also UD GIS helping us on that effort. We put through that planning process of obviously coming to you as council and briefing you, and then going to the planning board for our two public meetings. We also had a very large stakeholder meeting that involved a lot of stakeholders across the county as far as the entities that are involved in this plan. As you know, the plan kind of covers a lot of requirements, a lot of effort, and that we went through with individual meetings with all of the municipalities over the months of January and February in order to solicit information from them and get feedback from them on what they really needed in the plan. The plan will be maintained from here on out on an annual basis. We'll do an annual update. Typically, we do that for instance, like today, when we have the annual briefing on the mitigation grants from DEMA, we usually get together with all the jurisdictions at that time and go through all of our plan, mitigation plan. We go through the actions and see what changes need to be made or any updates that can be made to this plan. Overall, looking at the hazards, we have not had a lot of incidents or occurrences over the past 5 years that have impacted us, obviously until this past year. 2020, as everybody states, is the year that we won't all forget to an extent, because of obviously the coronavirus and then also the two storms that we suffered in August. Overall, the ranking pretty much stayed the same from the 2015 plan after doing all the analysis on it. The ranking that Newcastle County is vulnerable to or hazards that we face, obviously the number one is flood, our number two is hazmat, and then from there we have coastal wind and some of the other natural events that we have. Also a public health incident got in there pretty good. Obviously a lot of this deals with the occurrences in addition to the vulnerability or the probability of that event happening, and that's where that ranking comes in at. Then we spelled out, we went and reviewed our mitigation goals and objectives and what the mission of this plan is and how we're going to use technology and data in our analysis going forward, obviously as we have in the past, to try to make some really sound planning and adoption of codes and creation of more policies and then develop our projects that we want to put into the grant in order to reduce the vulnerabilities that we're seeing throughout the county and reduce some of these negative impacts that we have. As you can see, the goals are listed in this executive summary, so you pretty much have a full encompassing of the 200-page plan brought down into about eight pages. Just to give you a little briefing on the overall plan and what it includes. These are the required requirements from FEMA for us to include an introduction, which just kind of tells everybody how the plan's scoped out, how it's organized. The really key component here is the planning process that FEMA required a lot of us to update through the revision and the review and revision process over the past couple of months, hence why the little bit of delay in getting it to you for adoption and approval from FEMA. There were some added requests that FEMA made for us to include in this planning process section to detail a little more information about the meetings that we had and some of the interaction that we had with the municipals in that process. The community profile, obviously, this is just kind of similar to what the comp plan has. It has a briefing of the Guest County and the geography. Then we get into really identifying the hazards that Newcastle County are facing, both the natural and the human caused. And then analyzing those hazards in the way that we see what their frequency and their probability are and how they're going to affect us, which leads us to the vulnerability assessment, which typically outlines really the impact and what we're going to see as far as cost and damage to the Newcastle County. And again, this is the critical section that we remove from the public copy, because again, some of it can be really misconstrued, and just if you don't have an understanding of how this whole process works and how vulnerability is outlined, it kind of gets, you can take some different kind of paths from there and conclusions. Section five is the capability assessment. This is really where we look at Newcastle County as a whole, our administrative, our financial, and our political capability to do mitigation projects and take on mitigation efforts. And this is really one of the key sections that sort of Councilman Carter's ordinance a couple of weeks ago spoke to about introducing or integrating comprehensive land use and some of the other plans that are required by the government. This is where we reviewed those other plans and looked at how they interconnect with the hazard mitigation plan and how they integrate with us. And then finally, obviously, is our mitigation actions, which I'll kind of, I thought I had brought up here, I apologize, which is one of the key components in the adoption process, is looking at the mitigation actions that Newcastle County will take on. We didn't change our mitigation actions that much from previous. We added one for Newcastle County. Oops, sorry. Wrong one. And these are all the mitigation actions for all the entities. And what we did this year, instead of having a large portion of the plan duplicated by having previous mitigation actions and then new mitigation actions, we just kind of started numbering them from here on out as to when they were created and then provide updates to those. So most of you and council have seen this before. These are the mitigation actions previously. I think I handed these out when we did the February meeting also. So we're going to continue public education and outreach programs. This is an action back from the 2015 plan, and it actually goes back even further than that in the other plans. Annual training exercises, phase two of the channel improvements around Little Mill Creek, which is ongoing, uniform GIS database and using county data, as we mentioned. Again, the actions kind of tie in with the goals and objectives that we have. And then studying the vulnerability of the Christina River force main. Obviously, that's underway, and there's some updates to that. Critical facilities database, updating that every 3 years. Revising the county emergency management plan, implementing culvert improvements with DLDOT. There's a lot of actions that were put in the 2015 plan from DLDOT's perspective that we're making sure we are tied in with DLDOT as far as those coordination efforts. Reduce pollution charges via the stormwater systems, and obviously some of these actions are from our Public Works Department and from our Land Use Department, from other entities within Newcastle County government, in addition to us in Emergency Management and Public Safety having ours that we are responsible for directly. The Bayview Beach Project is also listed in there as mitigation action. Identifying critical locations for environmental monitoring. This goes along with our partnership with the Delaware Geological Survey and identifying the stream gauges and some of the other areas that we can identify stations to be put at so that we have the data needed to plan these mitigation efforts and also obviously record the impact to us and present that to the entities so that we have the data to prove that we've been impacted by a disaster. Functional and access needs is a big thing into emergency plans that's being requested by FEMA and being looked at. And then also our various flooding areas that we've identified throughout in the past is still an existing mitigation action. Again, here's a list of chronic road flooding areas from DelDOT that we have in there as a mitigation action as DelDOT takes them on under their portion of the plan. Stormwater flooding in Fox Run Shop Center, that's been an ongoing situation. I think there's pretty much somewhat solved that still needs to be looked at from the Conservation District. And then a couple other flooding, obviously flooding is our big thing in this. And we also have adopted as a mitigation action to look at and review the specific recommendations of the Delaware Sea Level Rise Advisory Committee per their report to look at climate change and how the sea level rise and the climate adaptation plan fits into the hazard mitigation plan. Now, some of those other actions are encouraging municipalities to adopt these new flood standards, evaluate and develop actions to mitigate areas vulnerable to flooding, some other critical infrastructure areas. That was a good that was a huge focus from FEMA's perspective this year, was for us to look at critical infrastructure and some critical facilities that were prone to flooding and other damages, and where we could mitigate those potentially or work with the entities that own them to mitigate them. There's a couple other mitigation actions. I'm not gonna read them all here, but the one new one that we did come up with this year was to develop the higher regulatory standards for construction and substantial improvements of critical facilities in those high hazard areas. That was something that suggested to us from land use. That's again an integration with the comp plan and some of the IBC, IRC, International Residential Code and International Building Code recommendations from going forward when we adopt these newer standards in for 2020 and onward. So without, let me get back to my meeting here so I can control my sharing. Sorry, there we go. Can't get to my full screen. Oh. There we go. So with that, if there's any questions on the mitigation plan and those actions, I will forward those. I did forward those mitigation actions on to both Karen and Christine to forward out to the council members. That's something that didn't really need to be part of the public record and go out to the public record. That's for all of you to review and evaluate. Obviously, they would be part of the public copy that goes out once this plan is posted on our website and once you adopt or once you vote and accept the resolution for adoption of the plan. Then the plan will be posted out on our website for public access after this. So that finishes my presentation. Hopefully I covered pretty much everything that we needed to go over there.
Thank you, Dave. Question, comment from members of council? Councilman Carter?
The mitigation stuff's good. I'm going through it and a lot to be done. One of the things I'm looking for is if you could talk a little bit about integrating the operational response. I mean, this is very helpful to reduce the response you have to have, but where do we deal with that? I mean, part of the mitigation and response, there are places where they merge together, you know, in advance, making sure our streams are clear, that kind of stuff. So that flooding, I just, can you talk a little bit about that? And one specific piece I want to hear a little bit about is the infield data collection after a storm, you know, and what technology we do or don't have. I was concerned that staff were out doing the best they could with the system they had. But things like, you know, when you were doing housing damage inspection, we didn't collect data on the trees down and those type of things into one integrated system that, you know, down here I had 3, 4, 5 different people going to the same residences and things like that. I'm just wondering where we can coordinate that. I mean, I understand the hazard mitigation, reducing the threats overall, but also, you know, making sure that we integrate that with our actual operational capacity and response.
Right. So this FEMA mitigate all hazard mitigation plan speaks more so to the actual, the concrete mitigation part of the five phases of emergency management and how do we really create projects and grants to limit or minimize the impact that we see. There are times when our in the previous plans when our mitigation actions kind of talk to response actions where we could find those, you know, coordination measures, the drills and exercises, the public outreach programs, those kind of things, those mitigation actions that are still there speak to the response part of it a little bit, but what you're leaning towards, and I know kind of what you're asking, is where's that integration come with our emergency management plan or our CEMP? This mitigation plan becomes an annex within our emergency management plan. That's how it's adopted. It's not entirely a separate plan. It is part of the overall comprehensive emergency management plan. And where the organization and some of that assessment goes is for us to work internally within the county on the recovery side more often. As you know, it's a challenge because there's a lot of effort typically on a very low-level disaster, even a small, medium emergency where the state has local services, they operate on their own, they can, you know, handle their own activity, the county departments handle their own activity, and there's not a need other than us talking by phone a lot of times and doing a quick information and data collection that we know these things can be handled through the normal change of everyday operations. To the point where we elevate it where, you know, we activate the Emergency Operations Center and everything has to come through that channel of the EOC so that we can map out where those things are going to be tasked out to and get agencies to kind of come together and say, hey, this is, we're definitely seeing a gap here and we need to address this gap. And we'll look from the after action from these storms and from this to try to close that gap up for the future. We're starting to look at our recovery annex and we're starting to look at some of those items that potentially one of the, you know, the better things that I know I've talked with the state is that we need to look at establishing a recovery center probably in the community area more appropriately for that level of a storm that we saw in August where we thought, hey, you know, it can be handled through the normal chains so that people have a place, more of a point of place to go to, and we can kind of start pulling in that information a little bit.
I agree. I hope you guys will do that even for small scale, because you know that's the train, that's the best training you can get for when these big things happen. You know, but I mean, we even south of the canal, that's when I got into issues of concerns over police jurisdictions, this kind of oddball jurisdictional thing where if it's a driveway with more than one house, it's county coverage. And if it's a driveway that comes directly off a state road, it's state coverage. And I understand an emergency dispatch, whoever, but you know, it's confusing as hell. Where you've been down working with us, for instance, on Blackbird Landing Road, there's one property that curves behind the houses with a driveway that connects them, which is county jurisdiction, and everything else is state. And it's just, there were just some interesting things down here that have come to light that I think we can learn a lot and do, hopefully improve on in the future. It's been pretty crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've established ourselves pretty much as a conduit in the past through a lot of the different agencies that we work with throughout the county. Like most people, when they ask us, you know, oh, Newcastle County has an emergency management office, yes, but we don't typically, you know, then people think, oh, you're only responsible for Newcastle County government, and it's not. You know, I'm responsible for the entire county, all 364 miles of it, you know, with the exception of the city of Wilmington, and the extent, and I got to work with all 13 municipalities on helping them coordinate. And then, like you said, you know, I cross those police jurisdictions, I cross those fire jurisdictions, and I got to work with 21 different fire chiefs and, you know, what is it, 12 or, you know, 8 or 10 different police chiefs across the county. So trying to pull in all that data and all that information to make sure that we're addressing needs of citizens that may need that assistance that we're not aware of. Yeah, definitely. That's something we can definitely improve on.
And I would like to see a much clearer emergency chain of command during an emergency in Newcastle County. You know, I mean, my experience in the state after 20-some years of coastal management was when I called whoever was in charge of DEMA, Jamie or whoever, you know, there was a command structure there that went really clear and fed down to different agencies. I didn't feel I was experiencing that in this storm when I was calling and trying to work with different department heads and others. And so I don't know, maybe it's just what I was experiencing down here, but I would really like to see a much clearer flow chart of the command structure and communication lines during a storm and who goes through who, because I think it's different than normal operations. And I think it needs to be very linear, very direct, very command and control. And I didn't feel we had it. I'm just telling you what the response looked like to me when I was trying to figure out what I'm in. And don't get me wrong, I mean, Tracy's doing great stuff and Rich is doing great stuff, but I just didn't see, a clear command structure that I should be tying into.
Okay. Thanks, Councilman. Any other questions or comment? President Hartley-Nagel?
Yes, Mr. Carpenter, I really want to thank you because I had a very different experience. I had no trouble in reaching anybody, and I had the whole county. So I want to, from my perspective and my experience, it was, I felt everybody was working very well together. Responding is the best that could be possibly done during, you know, both the tropical storms and tornadoes. And I want to thank you for all the help I got, and I did reach out to individuals and let them know that I was very grateful, as were the constituents in the county. So thank you.
Thank you, Madam President. Any other questions or comment from members of County Council? Okay, hearing none. Thank you very much, Dave, for the presentation. Job well done. We'll go to item number 7, Division of Police, Jurisdictional Responsibilities, Colonel Bond.
I apologize, I was on mute. Good afternoon, Vaughn Bond, Chief of Police. The jurisdictional responsibilities has come up recently, and I believe this is more so what we are prepared to talk about today are the jurisdiction, the questions about the jurisdictional responsibilities below the C&D canal. I have with me Mike Walsh, everyone knows him. He's responsible for our crime analyst. He's our crime analyst and responsible for mapping and so forth. And so what I wanted to do was just say, before I turn it over to Mike, that there has been some questions and concerns about our staffing below the C&D canal. We are fully aware of this concern. It has been a concern that we have discussed, myself and the CAO, have discussed for some time, and we are moving in the right direction in terms of looking at solutions to this problem, which include increasing our authorized strength, something that we will certainly have to come before council at a later time to discuss. There is no question that when we look at the number of officers that we have below the canal, while we feel it's average, we do know and recognize that there is a room for improvement. One of the concerns that I have is in terms of increasing the number of officers below the C&D canal right now. As was pointed out earlier by Councilman Street, we are seeing an increase in more violent crimes taking place in above the canal. And that has been a primary focus and obviously something that we need to be fully staffed in order to deal with those shootings when they come in and when they occur. Luckily for us right now below the C&D canal, we are not seeing those type of violent crimes. However, we are still seeing crime and criminal activity taking place. And there's also something to be said about just the mere presence that we have while traveling along the roadways, below the C&D canal. There are a lot of people who take comfort in that and being able to see a Newcastle County police officer that is present. We are not alone in the issues in terms of staffing. That is why we work very closely with the Middletown Police Department as well as the Delaware State Police to ensure that we are backing one another up and going to those complaints and assisting one another when staffing issues hit or affect our officers who are below, who are assigned to the MOT area. So I think what I would like to do is, and I'll come back and field any questions, but I have, like I said, Mike Walsh on here, and he has a few slides that we'll go through and just show what the calls for service look like below the canal, how many of these calls are primary dispatch calls for service versus secondary jurisdictional dispatches. And I believe that there's also going to be, or there may be some questions about when individuals call 911, how the calls are routed, and Chief Miller will be speaking on that shortly. So with that said, Mike, you're there?
Definitely. Thank you, Colonel. Michael Walsh, I'm the crime analyst for Newcastle County Police. And if I may, I'm going to pull up a screen share, and we'll start with jurisdictional map initially. And I believe I should be coming up on the screen. The quilt work that we sort of have before us right now is generated, actually, land use maintains this for the police and the 911 centers. Looking at the canal, the geographically orient folks, Chesapeake and Delaware Canal across the top, Routes 1 and Route 13 coming down the eastern side, and Summit Bridge Road coming out of the Newark and Bear area down to Middletown. The color coding that we have on this map, the light pinks or mauve color, are the areas of jurisdiction that fall primarily for Newcastle County Police. The rest of the area in light green is the Delaware State Police. And as we get down to the Middletown area, the light purple is Middletown Police Department. We use that same color for other municipalities in the map also. As I scroll it down, you can see as we start getting below the Middletown area, the quilt work becomes less and less Newcastle County in smaller sections and primarily Delaware State Police in the bottom area of the county. Just a little piece of Smyrna PD coming up above the county line. So with that is the breakdown for the jurisdiction. And another thing to point out is as we were to zoom in very fine detail, you would see things such as Boyd's Corner Road, although it's bisecting areas of Newcastle County Police jurisdiction, that entire roadway is Delaware State Police. Same as we see on Churchtown and Old Schoolhouse and many of these other secondary roads in the county. So we get over to talk about calls for service below the canal. I've mapped this out over the last 5 and almost 6 years counting this year. And unfortunately, as we all know with COVID, any statistic for 2020 is going to have an asterisk next to it. But looking at this, the total calls for service, both those that come through the 911 center and the ones that the officers generate, have generally been tending to increase over the last 5 years. And I want to peel back the layers of this a little bit so that we have a good understanding as to what the officers are involved with. When I break this down as to the calls for service that are occurring in the Newcastle County Police primary jurisdiction, that area that was shaded in light pink, versus the other jurisdictions, Delaware State Police and Middletown PD primarily below the canal, showing the split from year to year as to how many calls for service are Newcastle County Police in the Newcastle County Police primary jurisdiction, and how many calls for service Newcastle County Police is handling in the other primary jurisdictions. When I break this down a little bit further, I want to take a look at what portions of those calls for service were assigned to the officers through the 911 call center, either coming in through 911 or through the non-emergency 573-2800, versus those calls that the officers are initiating themselves while out on patrol. And we see the split that primarily the bulk of their work through the day comes in through 911. When we take all the layers of this together and sort of peel them back into little pieces, what I'm trying to show by this chart is that in 2019, the bulk of the activity by the officers came in through 911. Second portion of it is those calls that were officer initiated in our primary jurisdiction, with the dark blue section being those calls that came through 911, but we were dispatched to. And overwhelmingly, this is going to be assists for either the state police or Middletown PD, or in some rare occasions when they have no units available and we handle the complaint on their behalf. The final bar, the light blue bar, is the number of complaints that we self-initiate in the other primary jurisdictions below the canal. And when I look at this in detail, overwhelmingly, these are traffic stops that the officers are making on those primary roads that are connecting the communities that are in our jurisdiction. The last piece to look at on this very quickly is what are those call types? And overwhelmingly, for the primary is almost 400 calls in this year from January through the end of August, were officers initiating traffic stops. The next most frequent are residential alarms, followed by domestics, fraud, which could be either internet fraud, identity theft, bad checks, or any other general kind of fraud, and then falling down through the other calls for service, which I think I certainly don't need to read. So with that, that was the five slides that we wanted to put up, and I'll field some questions.
Yeah.
Any questions from members of council? President Hartley Nagel?
Yeah, real quick, for the calls that aren't 911, that would be non-emergency, which column are they put in? Or are they
those are the nine, they come in through the 911 centers. We break them down either as basically coming from the public or being officer initiated.
Okay. So they fall under the 911 initiated, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilman Carter?
Yeah. Can you explain the process for me to review the jurisdictional line? That patchwork, the craziness down there when we have, you know, with three officers, sometimes only one officer on duty for everything south of the canal. I mean, wouldn't it make more sense to revisit that with the state police and say you primarily take everything south of Towns End and we primarily in the county take everything north of Towns End or north of Middletown, something that puts it into a better block. And the reason being is that sooner or later, we want to go to community policing. I would like to have my rural residents and residents not in the subdivision to be part of the same community of those that are in it. I don't think crime and opiates and other things give a damn whether you're in a new development or not. And I understand why they did this years ago when they came up with this plan 20 years ago. It just doesn't look very efficient for either. It reminds me of our older franchise systems where I got down here, both Artesian and you know, Tidewater running pipes parallel to each other everywhere, duplicating those efforts and running all over. And I guess for me, what does it take to start a discussion to review how we do it and you know, what we do with Middletown? I know Towns End is now a little bit frustrated in talking about hiring a part-time police chief to begin to build their own police station down there because they want to get closer to community policing as they go. So I don't know, Colonel, if you can talk to me a little bit about that. I know Senator Vaughn is very interested in it. Kevin Hensley is very interested in it. So I think they would talk to the state police, but I don't understand the logic for the patchwork that we have. And it doesn't seem like the most efficient way to do policing.
Colonel, if you would, sir, if you could hold on for half a second. I wanted to go to Co-Chairman Street first, and then we'll come back to you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Co-Chairman Street.
When you look at that map, in terms of the jurisdictions, it's bizarre at best. And we don't get this straightened out. Calls going to come in. There's going to be a mix-up as to the jurisdiction. And then we're going to have a tragedy on our hands, and everybody will throw their hands up and say, it's not our fault, not our fault. Well, it's all of our fault. And I'm just going to remind y'all, we had a former councilman that took the position, I'm not taking this position, but took the position that what the hell do we need all these police departments for? Okay, let's get rid of some of them. We got one set of administration and those things. So I would strongly encourage police chief starting, but some of us and some of the other elected officials take a serious look at this and see what we can do to resolve this whole jurisdictional dispute, because if it doesn't get straightened out, eventually somebody else is going to come forward and say, what do we need all these police departments for? We need to have one police department.
Colonel?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that in order for us to engage in a conversation about changing up the jurisdictions, if you look at past jurisdictions, it went all the way up to the governor of the state being involved in that. And I think that it starts with the conversation between myself and other agencies to determine whether or not we're all on the same page. And then moving from there, involving the local elected officials all the way up to the governor in order to, you know, make any changes. Now, I agree that when you look at the map, it is, you know, kind of we have little smaller areas where we have jurisdiction than you have the Delaware State Police. But I would venture to say that if you have a map up here of the areas covering above the canal, it may look very similar to that. But it doesn't mean that we cannot go back and take a look at it, have some conversation with the Delaware State Police, Middletown Police Department, to see whether or not we can, if we should make any changes to this jurisdictional agreement.
Co-Chairman Street, then Councilman Carter.
I think the point that Chief just made is critical, because we have the exact same problem on this side of the canal. So much so to the extent that, you know, sometimes both end up showing up at the same place at the same time. And I understand some of that's backup and some of it's assistance, but some of it is also confusion. And it's, you know, in my opinion, you're wasting resources, and it should be crystal clear. And it doesn't, in my opinion, need to be that spread out. In my council district alone, outside the city, to me, it just doesn't make any sense. State police had a road, and we had it developed. I mean, it's
Carter. Or I'm sorry.
I think the whole thing needs to be reviewed. In my opinion.
Okay. Thank you, Councilman. Councilman Carter.
Yeah, Colonel, the extent that you can initiate those, I really appreciate it. I know I have been talking with legislators down here who, one thing we talked about was whether they would put a resolution into the General Assembly to ask the governor to review this, maybe set up a task force, whatever it takes. That would be a lot better if you could work with the other chiefs and kind of see where you are and what you can work on, and give us some idea of some parameters to work from, and then come in on top of that to give you that authority to begin to do it. I mean, I still have concerns. I mean, I know it's spread out and it doesn't look as bad as north of the canal, but my district alone to get from one corner to the other without traffic is 48 minutes. When I go up to Councilman Cartier's, I think we can get across this district in 7 minutes. It is a difference. And, you know, I don't know, can you talk to me about if you make an arrest, what are you doing with evidence? Do they have to drive up north? Do they take them to the Middletown Police Station? I mean, I need to talk about, do we need another Southern Patrol headquarters down here soon, just small enough for the holding cell and an evidence room and that type of stuff in the next 5 years? Because that impacts things like impact fees that we should be passing legislation to charge. Those type of things as well. But if you could start those conversations and let me know what you hear back, and I can continue to talk to, you know, to Senator Ennis and the others that are concerned. I appreciate your help that we had with this crazy shooting range down here. I mean, you know, maybe we don't have crime down here because everybody's starting to buy these AR-15s and shoot them down here, but it's getting, it's just, as we get houses popping in here and there, it's just a concern. And then even things like right now, I got people who, you know, it's a small area, but they're out of their houses, and they talk about how you never see a police drive by on their road. You know, right. Gumbush Road, they're out in the rural areas, you know, and quite frankly, they feel their best protection is a mean dog and a loaded gun. And that's not what I would like to have as our kind of community safety program down here to the extent that we can. And I know it's a resource issue, but anything you can do to at least start this conversation, and I know it's going to get into issues because the state pays for all the policing in the other two counties, and we pay for it all up here, and all of that complication. But it's 20 years old. We have better technology. We have a lot of other things. I just think we should start this conversation. To the extent that I can be engaged in those, I would love to, you know, to see what we can. It just would be really, really helpful to try and just do a really good study of there's got to be a better way to do this. I don't know what it is, but there's got to be a better way.
Yeah. Well, Colonel Bond, I agree with you. And I think that, you know, for us as an agency, we have to look at the future. And there's no question with all of the development down there below the C&D Canal, we are going to have to increase our number of officers. And as I said from the beginning, one of the things that makes people feel safe is their ability to look out the window and see a police officer driving by. And it has come up, and we've talked about it time and time again, about having more officers down there. My goal is I really want us to be prepared for what we're seeing, which is that growth. That is why the county, the chief administrative officer and myself have been talking quite a bit and putting words into action, because we have to plan for that down the road. And then when you're talking about another police station, you know, to answer your question, when an officer below the C&D canal makes an arrest, that if they take that person into custody, they are bringing that person back up here to headquarters. They are processing the evidence here at headquarters and putting it and submitting it in. And so it does take them away from that. Now, when that happens, what typically happens is the lieutenant or the sergeant will realize that an officer has to come up here, and we do our best to send another officer down there so that we can still have coverage down there. But yes, I agree with you 100%. It's a conversation that we have to have. And I think that probably after I leave, you'll probably see another building going up below the SBU area, below the canal.
I get my way. It's why they're still here.
Thank you. Thank you, Colonel. In the essence of time, you know, this particular topic is on the radar now. And I think that it's going to be a discussion point in the future as far as planning and implementation or path forward. If we could, because we have our finance committee meeting right after this, go to item number 8, update on emergency medical services. Who do we have with us from EMS? Okay. Don't see anybody. Let's move to item number 9, update on communications division. Chief Miller.
Good afternoon. That might be evening now officially. I'll move quickly. As it relates to our calls for service and the way we divide Newcastle County along with some of Kent County in call handling process, we're very interested in being at the table when it comes to this discussion that you just had for some time. But this jurisdictional issue doesn't lie just within Kent and Sussex County, Kent and Newcastle County. It spreads in every municipality that resides within Newcastle County. And I'll give you an example. Miller Road up in Newcastle County, around the Home Depot area, there are houses that the front of their house sits in the city of Wilmington and their backyards in Newcastle County.
Yep.
And this problem has existed since I was a call taker 28, some, I'll stop there, some 20 plus years ago. But I would look forward to, I agree, some council people, I think Councilman Street made it quite clear that some of these jurisdictional boundaries are really like a jagged edge. They're just, they don't make sense. And in today's world, with the GIS capabilities we have, we could apply today's technology and make that much better. But with that said, that's where we stand as Newcastle County. I would like to take a moment to share a screen and go with presenting update to council. Again, Jeff Miller, Chief of Communications, and our council update as we were on the agenda or the docket to do. So we're going to cover real quickly, I promise. We did have a few 911 statewide system failures. I'll go over that. Where our current staffing is, our citizens telecommunicators class, how we're still responding to the COVID-19, our call volume and our call processing. But we did have a statewide system failure on September the 28th. It resulted in cellular devices not being capable of getting through to the 911 system, meaning our provider of 911 that delivers it to the state of Delaware, they were incapable of making the call end to its final point, being Newcastle County, Sussex, or Kent County, or any of the other PSAPs throughout the state of Delaware. That was our PSAP provider in Trotto. I'm sorry, our 911 provider in Trotto. That was a system upgrade problem. And at the end of the day, they finally came back with us as that was an upgrade that drug over not only from Longmont, Colorado, it affected that server there. It also affected the Miami server. So truly, in the state of Delaware, when you dial 911, your call from a cellular device no longer leaves your cellular device and goes right to a central office of a phone system and then delivers it to us. It either goes to Longmont, Colorado, or it may go to Miami, and computers within milliseconds figure out where it should be delivered to, and that delivery process failed. They've come back with ways to improve their system and make sure that that does not happen in the future, and we'll be looking out to not only our executive's office, but our county council that some of their root cause answer issues. For the end of the day, they get $40 million from the state of Delaware for a 10-year contract. And we've had several major failures that are very concerning. But the most recent disruptions were even more concerning. October the 5th, and again on October the 11th, I believe, there were two disruptions that affected Sussex County and Kent County and did not affect our 911 center. The really bad news is that the social media comes out and says, oh, 911's down again, it doesn't work, you need to know your 10-digit number or try texting, and people start to take their own spin on what they've read or what information goes out to them. And that information was incorrect in some aspects and led some people in Newcastle County to believe that maybe their 911 call would not go through on the other two events, October 5th and October 11th, but that was not the case. So the managers are working with the state 911 administrator. We're identifying appropriate citizen notification, and we're working with the Department of Homeland Security and their PIO so that when a message needs to go out, it goes out statewide. It's no longer just, hey, this one county has a problem and you might need to call this number, or you might need to call that number. It's too confusing. At the end of the day, the public in the state of Delaware, when calling or needing to call 911, they deserve a reasonable opportunity to say, hey, 911 didn't work. What are my other choices? Typically, we're finding out that text messaging almost always works. Our administrative phone lines work well, but we are looking at, and you know, we're going to advertise to the public that right now our 302-573-2800, because in today's world, in a mobile calling situation, you have to have 10 digits to make it work. We just need to make sure that the public knows the right number to call. We're also working with the state to come up with an 800 number that'll fall back to a administrative type line that will then be redirected to the proper 911 center. So the 911 PSAP managers are on top of it. We are working diligently, but it has come to the point that it's time to reach out for some assistance from our executive's office and our council just to, you know, bang the doors and say, hey, what's going on? We pay a lot of money and we've had serious service disruptions. Moving on to emergency communications staffing. We're still right around borderline where we were the last report, I think it was in July. But anyway, we're at an operational strength of 88, currently 76 with 12 vacancies. The good news is we are working and in collaboration with our partners in not only, well, OEM didn't have any openings at the time, but our police and our EMS. We did do a we did an open house on September 26th outside of our public safety. You'll see on the bottom left, if you can actually see the presentation here, there's a line of people waiting to get in to talk about becoming a professional telecommunicator. Everybody was safely socially distanced. Everyone had masks on. We followed everything we needed to do with COVID-19. But we are looking to start a virtual Zoom learning experience for our Telecommunicators Academy, if not by the end of this month, getting started based on some of the challenges of COVID-19 for typing tests and background information. I expect us to, within the next 2 months, have a class completed. We had 54 interactions with this event. It was a rainy day. It was a miserable day, and a lot of people came out looking for a job. And it was good that we went through with it. There was a lot of discussion of maybe canceling it or postponing it to a better date with, hoping for better weather, but it worked out. As it relates to our communication center, we still continue to do our own decontamination within the 911 center. The good news is we've had very limited employees. I'm talking less than a handful of employees who have tested positive for COVID, and between our HR and our risk management and communications process, we've done a really good job at keeping the exposure level down and limited and outside of our 911 center. Unfortunately, that also includes no one visiting our 911 center outside of our public safety telecommunicator professionals. So that makes for different challenges. We still continue to do thermal imaging scans of everyone coming into the 911 center, especially on the very first day reporting to work. So we're still looking for that temperature. The next part is our total EMS incidents. This includes advanced life support, paramedics, basic life support, and our Wilmington Fire Department. And this will give you a 5-week, I did email this out earlier today. I don't know if you received it yet. However, a 5-week breakdown. So we're looking at each week. This past week, we're about 5.3% less overall EMS incidents. That does not mean that the seriousness of the incidents have not increased. We've seen that. And that seems to be a trend throughout our country. We broke the police numbers down to a 3-week process, but that'll be available to you in your email as well. But here's the big picture. The last 14 days, we've been answering calls in 10 seconds or less, 92.58% of the time. Over almost the last month, 92%, but our yearly total is still 93%. And again, in my entire career in Newcastle County, we've never seen numbers like this. So it gives great tribute to our team and the work that the people that are doing, that are answering the calls, that are processing the calls, that are dispatching the calls, are doing great due diligence to make sure that your 911 call in your time of need is being answered as fast as humanly possible. So total 911 calls answered so far year to date, 172,000 and some change. Administrative calls, a little bit over 81,000. We've had 38 text messages of which were actual emergencies, and had a response from those 38 text messages. There were actually 14. In the last 14 days, this is our biweekly report to the county executive's office. In the last 14 days, we've had 14 either CPR or subject choking, but we've given pre-arrival instructions over the phone as telecommunicator professionals to make those people's situation better as best as we can. I'm sorry that sounds fast. I'm just trying to meet your agenda. Does anybody have any questions for me?
Questions from members of council? Let me see if we can get our chief. Can you give us our screen back? There you go.
There you go.
There we go. We got her. All right. Questions from members of council? Questions? Okay. Hearing none. Chief, we appreciate the update. Chief Logeman, I see you're with us. Would you want to give us the update on emergency medical services?
Yes. Thank you, Councilor. Councilman, and I'll be brief. I do know you have
it's the same thing Miller said.
More meetings to come here. Our daily call numbers, volume numbers are back to what I refer to as pre-COVID. We do look at those closely. We trend them. I'm trying to get an idea of, are we going up? Are we going down? We also look closely at the numbers at the Division of Public Health provide to us of testing outcomes, percent positives, trying to get an idea of where exactly we are in the pandemic picture here. As of late, we're running at normal levels. I'm not seeing any significant increases in our calls for service regarding COVID. I think if you listen to the scanner traffic, you would hear on a regular basis our people are being reminded to use proper precautions because people are answering positively to the questions that Chief Miller's personnel are asking them regarding symptoms and any COVID-19 positive results that they or people in the household have. That's a great help to our people, giving them a heads up as they go into situations on what to expect. Obviously, we're taking precautions, whether or not a certain level of precautions on every incident, whether or not we know there is COVID, just because, as we know, there's many instances of people who are asymptomatic and are positive for COVID-19. Our PPE, personal protective equipment supply, we have a sufficient stock on that. Every day we're measuring what we are using and forecasting out what our needs are. We try to get a good lead on our future needs, since there are some extended delivery times that we're seeing from vendors. We've got great support from Newcastle County Government's purchasing department on finding exactly what we need in a timely manner. So a big thank you to them. Weekly, we have communication with public health through our medical directors, and they are willing to answer phone calls on a daily basis if need be from us for guidance on treatment of COVID patients and also evaluating potential exposures that we have. I am happy to say that our personnel are, in my opinion, doing a pretty bang up job out there. They're facing a lot of challenges with COVID-19. They're still responding on every single incident. They're practicing the PPE requirements as they've been instructed to. And right now, our need to self-isolate and quarantine people due to breaches in PPE use is way down. Right now, we have nobody out for that, and it's been a while, knock on wood. And I attribute that to the vigilance of our people, and it's something I bring up frequently just to the general public, maintaining that vigilance. COVID's still out there, and please continue to practice, what they refer to as COVID courtesies. Yeah, you see it on the billboards over the roadway. One thing on the near horizon is within the next week, I'm hoping to put some new airway equipment out onto the street. We're leveraging technology. This is video laryngoscopy. So people who are in severe need of breathing help or unconscious cardiac arrest, we put, in layman's terms, the breathing tube down into your trachea, into your lungs, so we can control your airway and breathe for you. So we're going to be putting out this video laryngoscopy tool. It's a great device with a video camera at the end of it and LCD screen on the outside. It's one of the riskiest procedures we do because you are taking control of someone's airway, and this is going to aid us greatly and allow us to document it. I'm hoping to have it out earlier in the year. However, COVID and the supply issues really hampered our efforts, but hopefully within the next week, we're going to be getting it out. The EMS Station 5 project's moving along on schedule. We have biweekly meetings with the general contractor and architectural firm. The renovations and the new construction, they're all scheduled to be done at the beginning of February. The only delay I think that we're going to be seeing is the landscaping, because early February, are going to be unable to obviously complete plantings, and some of that might have to wait until spring till the weather is appropriate. Special thanks to Councilman Carter for the drone photos. Those are appreciated. It's pretty neat to be able to see the changes that are occurring there on a regular basis. The assistant chief position, the position that I promoted from, is vacant. We're in the process of filling that. I'm looking forward to doing that in the near future. And that'll end my update, and I'm available for any questions.
All right, thank you, Chief. Any question or comment from members of council? Okay, hearing none, thank you once again, both chiefs. We go to other, anything under other? Co-Chairman Street?
Well, I have a question about the reward money that was put up, and I think it got up to around $25,000 for the person who shot at our police officers. And some of it said for the capture of, and only one part of it that I saw said for the arrest and conviction. So my question is, which was it?
Colonel, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
All right, sir.
So I was under the impression, and I have to check, but I was under the impression that it was for information leading to his apprehension.
As it should be. But that really is exasperating to me. That's exactly what should have happened. But it's exasperating to me when I sat up in that conference room, not once, but twice, and asked for the reward money for the person who did the Rose Hill shooting to be changed from arrest to arrest and conviction. And so if in this situation, appropriately so, if the award money was for arrest, then it needs to be, I trust it's going to be consistent going forward. When we find it necessary and appropriate to put up reward money for heinous crimes committed against civilians, that it's going to be consistent with what we did with our office. And the excuse that I got before, as it relates to the Rose Hill killing, was, oh, we can't do it because the Attorney General doesn't want it done that way. That sets the precedent. Or that the other contributors didn't want it that way. Well, we can't do it both ways, and if we did it for the apprehension and the situation with our officers, I think we need to be fair and consistent when we have heinous crimes that we think need to be dealt with and are worthy of reward money. When they're committed against civilians, that we should have the same latitude consistent with what we've done with the person that shot at our officers.
This is Colonel Bond. Uh-huh. You, I lost a lot of you. I'm not sure if everyone else did, but I heard most of it, and I agree.
What'd you say?
He said he agreed.
What'd he say?
Colonel Bond?
I agree. Hopefully I'm not breaking up.
No, I just wanted to double check. Finally, we're agreeing on something. That's great.
This is Jeff Miller. I knew that's what he wanted. Three times. Good job.
All right. Anything else under other? Hearing none, Nellie, do we have any public comment at this point?
I don't see any public comment.
All right, thank you. Motion's in order.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? So carried. Mr. Chairman of Finance.
Yeah. Finance will convene at 5:30 promptly.
5:30.